Sid Fernando's your man. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. I was setting up the visit letting everybody imagine, going to the barn of a big race winner on the Sunday morning after, and the staff is still aglow, and there's a certain peacefulness, and the whole barn area is kind of awash in a satisfaction element that you have to experience. It can't really be described, and you got to do it on Sunday with Barkley Tag and Robin Smulin and their team, and you put up some really fascinating material, little snippets of conversation that people hadn't seen, heard leading up to Saturday's Belmont win.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. It was really fun to do that. And, I just decided when I was there, heck, I'll just video this and post it. So if you follow me on Twitter, I have a protected account. But if you happen to be someone who follows me, you can actually see the videos of Robin and Barkley, discussing certain elements and emotions and decisions they made. In their own words, it's the feedback, Steve, has been just tremendous. It gave people, especially in this pandemic, where there wasn't a lot of press on that Sunday over there, and a lot of people were able to get that flavor, right from directing these videos, which I posted. So if you haven't seen them and you do happen to follow me and you missed it, you can go to my Twitter account at Sid Fernando and see them. I encourage you to do so, because there's some really interesting stuff too. There's one part where Barkley and I are talking, and the conversation, for example, veers into Frank Whiteley, Cheryl Ward, and Forgo, which was a lot of fun, because Barkley used to work for Frank Whiteley during Ruffin's 2-year-old season that winter, and he just gave a really illuminating example of Frank Whiteley. Mr. Whiteley was a hard boot, gruff, from that old school of thought, train of thought, but when it came to Cheryl Ward, who trained Fordo at the time, Mr. Whiteley was really respectful. And it just kind of paints a really interesting picture, because eventually when Cheryl Ward kind of retired and Martha Jerry and Cheryl Ward were looking for a new trainer for Fordo for 1976, Mr. Ward, of course, chose Mr. Whiteley. So that's a kind of a fun little diversion. But as you pointed out on the show the other day, Robin had a great, great piece on why they stuck with Manny Franco. And you and Barkley discussed it in depth. But, those were some great videos, if I say so myself. And I encourage you to watch them.
Well, the fact that Robin reached out to Ramon Dominguez for insight, and Barkley, provided the counterbalance to Ramon's association with the barn, and riders, there's eras that when riders come into the sphere, as it were, with a barn, and Ramon rode a lot of winners during the prime of his career for Barkley. There's what's interesting about Tag too, that kind of a long form conversation that we never seem to get to with him. We talk about some of his old early successes, but his his origins as a Pennsylvania horse country steeplechase rider. I mean, that the origin story for Barkley.
He was he's from that old school steeplechase. Then, careers on the racetrack, assistant, went on his own in the early 70s. And Robin, too. I mean, Robin, people don't know this, but she worked as an assistant to Dr. John S. Fisher, the trainer. And then from there, went on her own and trained at Charlestown. And then later, hooked up with Barkley when they started dating. But interestingly, a backstory to this is that Barkley had known Robin's family for a long time and actually had known Robin, I think from the age when Robin was five. And so, it's a long history. And then, of course, the two of them developed a relationship much later on, obviously. But a really interesting story, of them, of their respective training careers. As you point out, they're real deep roots in mid-Atlantic horsemanship, and it's so evident, Steve, when you go to the barn. It reminds me of old barns I used to visit, and as a young kid, I actually used to sneak into Belmont, and as a teenager, and I actually go over to Frank Whiteley's barn and see them hosing four go, like 76, 77. And, Barkley reminds me of that old school that kind of, it's not there anymore. So a lot of people that kind of remember that, they were very enthused with those videos they did, and it kind of brought back a lot of memories for them, too.
When I see Barkley next, I want to ask him, he's from Lancaster, and it makes me wonder if at any point he's had horses for Peg Steinman, who is Lancaster. Right. She looks Lancaster.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, for years with Doug Fout, but it does occur to me that. There had to be, and also I'm curious Barkley's, he must have handled some chase horses over the years.
I'm not sure. That's a good question to ask him.
We're gonna explore that. I may hear from. From Bill Gallo momentarily fill in all the blanks. We should do Barkley Tag. This is your life. We could do a whole thing with bring
he's
out,
got an incredible story. Yeah, he's got some really incredible stories.
He's such to me, you've had now an extended opportunity over the years because of the association with Mr. Fipke, to spend time with him. He had so little exposure to the national turf riding scene ahead of Funnyside and was immediately portrayed as curmudgeonly and grouchy and this and that, which he just isn't. I mean, there's a sort of a facade there once you get past it, he's as warm and affable and easy to talk to. And, when you're at Belmont, particularly, more so at Belmont, it seems, than Saratoga, at Belmont, when he comes over and he's one of the trainers that'll train on the main track, and he'll come and lean on the fence, and you know, you have half-hour windows, 20-minute windows to talk to him that way, and it's always a pleasure, and you always learn something. I mean, he'll volunteer information, and it just it's so clear that this time around on this Triple Crown run, you know, he's very different, and people are going to have another chance to, you know, get to know him. I wish there was more media that, you know, were around. I mean, it's such a narrow focus right now, Sid. I mean, basically, it's Dave Greinig and Bob Ehalt and you know, that are on track. And, yeah.
Exactly.
That's pretty much it right now.
Everything you just said about Barkley kind of comes through in his videos, too, because you see his understated humor, you know, in it. And you see how what a really a nice guy he is. And it's funny because he's been painted as a curmudgeon, but for years he thought I was a curmudgeon, and he thought I didn't like him. I just thought it was just so freaking ironic. I said, "Well, you're the curmudgeon. Why would you think I didn't like you?" But you know, I guess he got the same thing from my demeanor. You know, but
that's great.
You know, he's got a great sense of humor, and he's very accessible. And actually, you know, what really happened, Steve, was I was so intrigued by this colt last year that what I started to do was I just started to call Barkley, like at the end of last year, like once every week to see what was going on with him. And so it just became a thing where I would just call him, you know, once every week, once every 10 days, even while he was in Florida, since he got up, just to keep tabs on this colt. And through that, I was actually able to get a real window into this colt because, you know, he started off, you know, he was a small, stocky colt. And I've actually watched him grow from, you know, 15.5. So Robin just told me the other day that he's now 15.75. He's still not a huge colt. He's not a big colt, but he's had that development, physical development as well. Say, as opposed to that top European 2-year-old Pinatubo, who was a small colt last year, but muscular and overpowered his opposition last year. And this year, you see that he really hasn't grown, and his contemporaries have caught up to him. He's still running great, but he lost two close races, and you can see how small he is. This colt is, you know, has grown, and it actually kind of ties into the pedigree, which is an interesting pedigree.
Dig in. Let's talk about him. And it's funny because the size element is going to come into play, I suppose, when they start discussing the, you know, the 10 furlongs. Let's hit the highlights on the page.
Well, I think everybody knows, of course, that he's by constitution a son of Tappan, a grade one winner at 3, won the Florida Derby, and at 4 when he won the Don. So here's the common element. And by the way, for your listeners, who also are on Twitter, I tweeted in ahead of this conversation, I tweeted the 5-generation pedigree. So if you want to, those of you who are on Twitter and saw that, you can follow along with it. But, you know, obviously he's by constitution. He's out of the mare Tiz Fizz by Tiz Now. Constitution is a, you know, good-sized son of Tappan, and Tiz Now is a, you know, is a big horse. So you would expect some size, you'd think. By the way, this colt was bred by Steve Davison and Randy Gulat's Twin Creeks. It's bred in New York, obviously. Twin Creeks has an interest was a half owner of Constitution, and Constitution stands at Windstar. But anyway, just here's the great takeaway, because I don't want to complicate this to get this point across, but Constitution never ran at 2. As I said, he was a Florida Derby winner at 3 and won the Don at 4. Just lost damn Tiz Fizz. she was a grade two winner on turf at five. She never ran at two. Her sire, Tis Now, dual Breeders' Cup Classic winner, he never ran at two. The second Dan, and if you follow that pedigree, that's Tis Fizz's Dan, and that's the mare, Jin Running, who's by, you know, Kentucky Derby winner, Go for Jin. Jin Running never ran at two. Now, just imagine this, right? You got all this stuff up close in the top part of the pedigree, the sire, and the bottom part, the dam, with a lot of up-close relatives, including down the first and the second dam, that did not run at two. The sire did not run at two. The broodmare sire did not run at two. Yet this colt was a G1 winner at two when he won the Champagne. So that's one of the reasons why, Steve, I felt that with that element, he had a lot ahead of him at three and possibly even four. But he had a lot of development into him. So I figured that this colt with so much in the pedigree that was non-raced at two had to be even better at three. And here's where he's got a great blend of speed and stamina and actually some early development when you go back into the pedigree. Now, if you have that chart, I just told you the first dam is Tis Fizz by Tis Now, who was a 10-furlong winner. The second dam, Jin Running, is by Go for Jin, who obviously was 10-furlong winner, won the Kentucky Derby. The third dam is mare named Crafty and Evil, and she's by Crafty Prospector, who was a Mr. Prospector horse known for his speed, stood down in Florida first before he came up to Kentucky. She was a two-year-old. She made her debut in April of her two-year-old season, and she actually won two races at two, but she didn't win anything else after the age of two. And she was actually, challenged at distances above sprint. She was a real speed mare. Her half-brother was the champion two-year-old and horse, the last horse of the year to be a two-year-old champion and the last horse of the year to be a horse of the year or two. He was Favorite Trick. So he was by Phone Trick, and he was an outstanding two-year-old, obviously. He also made his debut, at Keeneland in April. He kept going, though, unlike his half-sister. And he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, which, first horse of the year since Secretariat in 1972. So behind this late maturing early part of the pedigree, further back as you get to the third and fourth dam, you get some real early speed, early development. So what you have in this pedigree is a great combination of speed, stamina, early and late development, and into the law, it's all sort of come together. And I just want to make one last point, and that's one of the reasons why I, and Steve, you can see this, you'll note this too, because you're always a five-generation pedigree watcher, but if you look, there's not that much inbreeding, right?
There's next to none.
Next to none, but what there is in the fifth generation, 5x5 to Seattle Slough, and 5x5x5 to Mr. Prospector. Three crosses to Mr. Prospector, two crosses to Seattle Slough, and of course, further back, but the interesting thing about this for pedigree aficionados understand this. Seattle Slough and Mr. Prospector, two great sires, five crosses there with the two of them combined. They also happen to be from the same female family. Seattle Slough's fifth dam was Myrtlewood. and Mr. Prospector's fourth dam was Myrtlewood. Two great sires who came from the same family. You've got a lot of that in here. And one last thing why this pedigree, really, when you look at it, is so well constructed. Tappet himself has done very well with In Reality, and particularly with Relaunch. If you notice, Tappet, his third dam, Moon Glitter, is a full sister to Relaunch. They're both by In Reality out of Foggy Know. This is a pattern. The pedigree analysts have noted this. Tappet has done very well with Relaunch in the pedigree. Tappet has also done very well with Seattle Slough in the pedigree. And so, as you see, this pedigree combines a lot of those very positive elements, too. And I think those are all the salient points you really need to look at when you're looking at Tisdalaw's pedigree. Barclay Tagg, as he told you and he told me, yeah, he wished this race was the Belmont was a mile and a half, because he does not think this horse is limited by distance. Robin, who rides the horse, told me he never blows hard. She said, in fact, after the race, the test barn, he was the only horse who wasn't blowing hard. If you looked around, everybody else was blowing hard. He just runs his 9 furlongs and 146 and change. He was not blowing hard. All of this suggests this horse will stay. And, you know, it puts them in a really nice position for the next three races that are on its calendar, which is the Travers at a mile and a quarter, the Derby at a mile and a quarter, and the Preakness at a mile and 3/16.
There's so many things, Sid, that you touched on there, and I want to drive home. You've been saying that there is a stallion career, obviously, in the wait, in the waiting for him.
Yes.
And when that is announced, it'll be announced. He is going to be exceedingly attractive as a stallion. You talk, he's a four generation outcross himself.
Yes.
And
yeah,
you start going through these mares. Tis Fizz is a four generation outcross, and in the fifth generation she only has In Reality duplicated. Then Gin Running is a four generation with only Never Bend, the only common ancestor. But then the next three dams, Crafty and Evil, Evil Elaine, and Distinctive Elaine, are all complete outcrosses. And
yeah,
there's got to be traits that are coursing through this horse that will connect with God knows what. And the other part that you bring up when you mention Seattle Slough, it immediately lights up. It's going to be irresistible to keep bringing up Funny Side, and it's not just because Barclay trained them both. Funny Side has Seattle Slough very prominent, Bell's Good Side, being by Slough aside. So Seattle Slough was a big influence involved with Funny Side, and in terms of the layout of a pedigree and the concept of a sire providing speed and the dam providing stamina, it's the identical pattern that that made Funny Side so dangerous. And the thing was, nobody really knew what they were dealing with Distorted Humor. At Constitution, though, he announced himself last year, so people were a little bit more aware. But otherwise, this would be an absolute identical scenario in terms of a horse like this in Barclay's hands and Robin's, and it's what makes this horse so serious. And then you fold in what Barclay learned 17 years ago about what it takes to sustain a horse through this kind of gauntlet.
Yeah, that's all true. And in an industry where you see so many horses with so many duplications up close, this horse, when he goes to stud, will be a, he'll be, this horse will be able to accept a wide range of pedigrees. And especially if you breed an inbred kind of mare to this horse, you'll get that, what's called that hybrid vigor. Because, you know, think about it. When, as you pointed out, when he goes to stud, his sons and daughters, when you look at tis the law's pedigree, with them in it, it'll be a total outcross in the sire. Because at five generations, you'll lop off Seattle Slew and Mr. Prospect, right? So it'll be a total outcross when they're breeding, you know, in terms of modern pedigree analysis. You know, there won't be duplications on the top part of the pedigree, the sire's part, with him as the sire. So he will absolutely be a horse that can work with everything that Constitution's been successful with, everything Tappet's been successful with, everything Pulpit's been successful with. He'll be able to accept a lot of horses. He's also a really attractive physical specimen, you know. I love that type. He's a type that he's a neat horse, muscular, correct, really attractive. He'll fit a lot of mares, too, physically. So there's a lot to like about this horse.
And I don't know if this is a good comparison or not. You know, when they were talking about his size, and you know that he's you know still has got some growing to do. The horse that came to mind was Uncle Mo, and how Uncle Mo as a 3 year old, and then what you see now, and if there's something, Sid, that makes horse players and fans of the game, you know, crazy about, you know, not getting a chance to see good 3 year olds become 4 and 5 year olds sometimes. It's when you see a horse like Uncle Mo and realize, oh my God, what would he have been as an older horse, when you see what an imposing horse he grew into, because that wasn't what he looked like as a 3 year old. And so, you know, as this horse matures and you know, they will continue to morph. You're gonna get a burnished, chiseled linebacker type of a stallion.
Yeah, he's not gonna be an Uncle Mo size, but he is gonna be exactly what you're saying. Every horse, when they let down and become a stallion, especially horses that have that musculature like his, tends to add to that picture in just the right ways. They get that extra bulk in the right spot, and they look a picture. And you can just project that onto this colt. And, you know, he's going to just be a physical standout in the stallion barn. I mean, he's got so much going for him. And the great thing about the deal, you know, I hate to keep talking about the fact that we know there's a deal in place for him. I've talked to the stallion farm that, you know, they'd rather the owner make the announcement if he so feels like it. I haven't pressed them to do it because, you know, it's no big deal. But the good thing about this is that, you know, I think I can let this part out, that the deal, and fans will like this, the deal in place is for him to also be able to run as a 4 year old.
Nice.
So
nice.
That is, you know, really a breath of fresh air. And to your point, we'll get to see an even more, a better physical, I'm sure, next year. You know, knock on wood, everything goes according to plan. But this isn't a deal where, you know, we're done and out at three, type of thing, you know, unless the horse gets hurt or something happens. But the good thing is that everybody's looking forward to running this horse, and we'll take one day at a time. But you know, it's a great example of letting this horse mature, and you know, let's see what happens in a non-COVID year too.
Exactly. Well, somebody asked me about his prospects, you know, going into the summer and fall, and you know, what would a Triple Crown achievement, you know, how would it be recognized? And frankly, if he wins any three of Belmont, Travers, Derby, Preakness, if he wins three out of four, it's a unique accomplishment. And if he were to sweep the table, pull a Summer Bird, you know, the way Summer Bird, you know, ran Belmont and Travers and Jockey Club Gold Cup, you know, that kind of a run. If he did that, it would be historic. There's no other, you know, if he was to win out from here to October, and then there's a Breeders' Cup to deal with too. I mean, it's a very interesting scenario, and he's got Honor AP to deal with and other emergent horses. So there's a long way to go, but this was a really satisfying result. Couple of quick points too, Sid. I want to slip in to give everybody a real quick thumbnail on Kodiak, who had as a unique an accomplishment as I think you're ever going to see at a place like Royal Ascot, with three winners on Saturday, the two juveniles and then the older winner. What is there to know about Kodiak?
Well, it's, you know, Kodiak is absolutely well established as a top sire in Europe. I mean, he stands for 65,000 euros, which gives you, you know, all you need to know about that. He stands at Talio Stud. But the American racegoers, breeding fans, stud farms here, what they should know about this horse is his pedigree. He's the son of Dane Hill. And more importantly than that, and really significant, is that he's also a half-brother to the outstanding sire, Invincible Spirit. Invincible Spirit, of course, he's a sire of top-level sprinters and speed horses, milers, stands at the Irish National Stud. And more importantly, Invincible Spirit's sons are carrying on, too. I mean, you've got Kingman, for example. You saw Kingman's presence at Royal Ascot. And in Australia, he's got, you know, a top-class son, one of the best there, I Am Invincible. Invincible Spirit and Kodiak share the same dam, obviously, because they're half-brothers, Rafa by Chris S. I mean, by Chris, the Sharpen Up horse. But what's interesting is they're also very closely related, because Kodiak is by Dane Hill, who's by Danzig. Invincible Spirit is by Green Desert, who's by Danzig. So they're Danzigine stallions from the same mare. And, you know, you pointed out the historic three black type winners in the same day in Royal Ascot, which that's going to be pretty hard to eclipse. If it's been done, I don't know. Galileo, I would suggest to her, Sadler as well, might have done it. I don't know.
Yeah, Nick Luck had a couple of, and he also actually said that, I guess, Knight of Thunder, who then had Bredenbury on Sunday for Grand Motion with in that Lady Shipman win, he said Knight of Thunder had a similar afternoon as well at Royal Ascot. And finally, Sid, because I don't want to miss the opportunity while it's fresh in everybody's mind, even though Violence has got a hatful of prominent stake horses right now, the first Grade One domestic win for a son or daughter of Violence, and got to be a nice boost for the Medaglia d'Oro son that is having himself a fabulous year.
Yeah, he's, you know, it's a type of win that you need for a stallion like this. You know, he was at 40,000, he's at 25,000 this year. Incredible pedigree that he's got, obviously. A Medaglia d'Oro out of that superb family. But here's the thing. You get that Grade One win domestically. He had a Grade One winner, Group One winner in Argentina. but his first domestic Grade One winner, that's a massive boost for the stallion and the way that horse won as well. What he's showing also, he's got this really good four-year-old, obviously, Volatile, who, you know, again, ran six furlongs in 107 and change. He's got this colt now, three-year-old, no parole, who just won a G1, like we said, seven furlongs. Looks like he's turning into a terrific sire of sprinters. And that's something to look into, because, I mean, he's doing it with, you know, no paroles, broodmare sire's Bluegrass Cat, who was a staying son of Stormcat, and the Volatile's broodmare sire's Unbridled Song. So it appears that, you know, that's one facet of his profile that's emerging as well, and it bears watching.
That's true.
A terrific boost for violence, yeah.
Well, happy for the team at Hill and Dale. And, of course, this is Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale every week with Sid Fernando. Sid, this was terrific as always. I appreciate it. And we'll see. We've got Ohio Derby. We've got 14 in the Ohio Derby lining up on Saturday. And then the Indiana Derby will not be far back behind it, as well as the Bluegrass. And it's unbelievable. Thanks, Sid.
Yeah, you got it, Steve. Talk to you later.
You got it. Follow Sid on, well, as you can. You have to ask for permission to follow Sid now. But you can reach Sid at Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. And now that breeding season is done and you got a good chance to look at your babies and make some plans, get out in front of it for next year. It's hard to believe. You know, July coming up quickly. It's the second half of the year. Second half of At the Races on this Wednesday. And our first Indiana Down, speaking of the Indiana Derby and Indiana Oaks, coming up in 2 weeks, going to have Bill Downs back to talk to and handicap a little bit, because a very good Wednesday card and the meet is well underway. And Bill Downs joining us, I think now. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. How have you been?
I've been all right. You know, it was a winter with all sorts of things, obviously, with the virus, and had some personal things going on. Had another, my other, you know, you heard the story of my dad passing away. Well, my mom passed away this past off season as well. So I was dealing with that, and then I got caught down in, you know, there's worse places to be caught during a virus, but during the pandemic, but I was caught down in Florida for the pandemic and trying to deal with stuff down there. And I was listening to your show. I had the Sirius XM in my rental car, so every day I would turn you on and listen and all that. So I feel like I've been keeping a track of what's been going on with the show more than what you guys, because I have Indiana Grand has been racing for a while, but we got back on June 15th, and you know, we have that change in schedule. We went from a Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday afternoon, and then a Saturday evening track to a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday afternoon racetrack. And then, you know, we sprinkle those quarter horse days on Saturdays throughout our racing season. But so far, so good in terms of handle. Handle's been really outstanding so far, and I think Mondays have been a decent hits, if you will, and we'll see how it goes. And you mentioned the Indiana Derby. We got that in 2 weeks from today, so it's heating up big time.
You know, you talk about the business side of things, and you know, not that that's our you know, our focus solely, but you know, the conversation that we had leading in April and May with Eric Halstrom, and you know, the what seemed like it was going to be a high-profile pick five. That has worked. But frankly, it's been just the depth of the cards and the full fields. And, you know, the one message that has, I think, gotten through, not that every racing office can deliver 10, 12 horse fields every single day. But Eric made it very clear in early spring that he was getting stall apps that was going to guarantee a full back stretch, and then having the proximity to, you know, all the training centers and tracks in Kentucky was only going to further enhance the pool of horses. And so, you know, here we are 3 weeks in, and, top to bottom, it's not like the cards are thin at the beginning of the day and then thicken up. I mean, a lot of racing offices will try to do that and provide at least a certain portion of multi-race wager schemes that, you know, that are going to be attractive. I mean, the cards have been just terrific, period. And that means more horses for you, though, Bill, to have to memorize.
Oh, that's fine with me. I'd much rather have a 9-10 horse field than a 5-6 horse field. I think any announcer would. That's kind of like one of the things that, just to talk announcing real quick, that's what people say, oh, you want a 5-6 horse field. No, I don't want 5-6 horse field. Give me 9-10 horse field. Give me a sprint, because the race calls itself, as opposed to 5-6 horse fields where you kind of have to make up stuff to fill the time, if you will. But, yes, but going back to the racing schedule, I think adding the Mondays is added to the dynamic of certain Kentucky trainers being able to participate more with our meets, and, you know, being able to bring whatever jock they want up here. That maybe they want to use a local jock. Other times they want to bring a Kentucky jock. So you've seen, you know, during the meet so far, Adam Biskitza, Florent Giroux, countless Kentucky jockeys coming up here riding on a regular basis. They might only have a couple bounds a day, but that's the one thing doing the morning line. I got to get back in the habit. You got to see which Kentucky jockeys are coming up here, because they're not coming up here for their health. I can tell you that. As much as I like Central Indiana, they're not coming up here for the Central Indiana air. They're coming here to win races and make money. And the Mondays, you know, allows guys like Brendan Walsh. I'm just looking right here at my PPs. Yep. Brendan Walsh is participating more during our meet. We got Bob Hess Jr. has got the morning line favorite in the eighth race today with a graded stakes winning filly, our mare, I should say, in our eighth race today. So those type of trainers really add to the overall quality of the field here at Indiana Grand, where, you know, maybe there's a race that you don't bet, but you might want to watch the race, because I think it's significant. There's more races that are significant that will be important in your everyday handicapping, whether you're looking at the Kentucky Circuit or wherever some of these Indiana Grand horses do end up during the meet or after the meet as well.
Well, and just looking down, it just so happens we had Tom Amos on Monday, so I brought up, you know, the early success that Tom has had, and he's got 5 wins already in 8 cards, maybe, and Gennaro Garcia. Not only is Garcia winning, he's winning and not getting bet. Which I kind of caught my eye. And today, in fact, when we look at this sequence, there was a Garcia horse today that I thought was live and is going to be in that same Naughty Alfred in the 12-5 claimer sixth race. Bill, that's been the wheelhouse horse for Garcia so far. 5-1, 6-1, the horse in a third or fourth choice type, and I thought that Naughty Alfred fit that bill. Glyshaw with a couple of wins, including the Sire Stake last week, and then from there, you know, the wins kind of spread out. Cipriano Contreras as well, Paul Holtis with a couple of wins the first week, Mike Lauer and others. But right now, Amos and Amos filling the entry box too.
Yeah, one thing that Tom does very well is in these turf races, he'll enter main track only horses, and you go, well, you know, what good is that? Well, we here in Central Indiana do get rain every now and then, and we were off the turf yesterday, and here he is with a race that came off the turf and had a big favorite and got the money in an allowance race. So Tom's very good at that, and he'll probably do that at least a half a dozen times this year, if not more, with the main track only horses. But going back to General Garcia in that six race, I thought that was a for a little 12-5 condition claiming race. I thought this race came up pretty strong. You know, Amos has got a song for you, Louisiana Bred, who's been off since late February at the fairgrounds, has some tactical speed. But I'm not, you know, I made him the second choice in the race. You know, yeah, he's going from allowance optional claiming to condition claiming, but he goes from state bred to open company. So I'm not in love with him. Bump Bailey, I watched that race where he had a little bit of trouble May 25th. Yeah, he was in a little tight there. But, you know, I wasn't in love with him either. There's a couple long shots. You mentioned Naldi Alfred. I would probably, I would definitely use him in my late pick five, but there's a couple in here that I like. Moonline for trainer Tim Austin's won a race so far at the meet and got Martin Garcia. That's an interesting note. I just was watching, looking at the overnight yesterday, and I was taking a look at you read the bottom of the overnight, and you see all sorts of things from the racing office, and sometimes you see jocks who are riding and their agents' phone numbers. Well, Alvin Jimenez got hurt opening week, was in a spill in one of our baby races, got caught in the aftermath, if you will, and Jimmy McNerney, who's the agent of Alvin Jimenez and Deshaun Parker, need another jockey because Alvin's going to be out for quite a while. And so who's Jimmy get? I believe he's got Martin Garcia's book now. So that was lifted. So you're going to probably see Martin Garcia ride quite a bit here at Indiana Grand, especially on those off days from Kentucky. So he's on Moonline. Miss Austin horse has been off since the end of last year in October, but both of his wins for a condition or a maiden claimer and a condition claiming race, he won both of those races rather impressively. I was actually semi-impressed. I'm like, I got to use this one if I'm putting together a pick five ticket. And then Nano, who's a horse that likes the Indiana Grand Surface, winning a second and two career starts, took on some much tougher horses in his last couple of races, including a stakes race on the synthetic the Presque Isle, and then last time out flopped at Churchill. But he certainly fits as well. This is the first time in a lower level claiming race. He was up for a tag last time out for $75,000, but this is a big drop down in class. So those are two long shots besides the one that you mentioned, Naughty Alfred. So to me, this is just like a great betting race where I'm going to try and attack the favorites and try and beat them with either Moonline the 8, Nano the 3, or your pick the 5, Naughty Alfred.
And there's one horse that I ended up putting fourth in my top four that we didn't mention. Ron Brown, who is deadly off the claim, and he took that horse from the Y Gods at Turfway in February, the 1 Cabot Trail. This is a quality road gelding, and he worked him a couple of times at Turfway in April and May, then came and, you know, when the backstretch opened, has got one work over the track, and just out of respect for his numbers, he's hitting at 40% with his last 15 claims first time out. And that's in the last 18 months, and a positive ROI. I mean, that is glaring. Not off to the greatest start, Ron Brown, but Ron Brown wins. And he's 1-for-16 so far at the meet, but he'll get his share of wins. As you say, middle of the pick five and a race for 12-5 that is really contentious. Let's hit a couple of the highlights as well from the beginning. And it opens with an allowance, non-winners of four lifetime for Indiana Breds. And there's a couple of good Indiana Grand angles, I thought, Bill, in here that maybe you could expand on. A horse like Mike Lauer with Drink at the Creek, who's coming back to face his own kind. He's been in open company, or she has, been in open company of late, and I thought that she had a big look in here at 6-1.
Yes, very interesting race, race four. This was another one of those races where it was there's a few different contenders, but Drink of the Creek showed me enough in that race at Churchill, ran on the turf and against open company condition claimers, and, you know, made a little bit of a move and then flattened out on the stretch. But, it, you know, at least it was better than what was going on at Oaklawn Park in her previous two races. And, of course, she does have both her wins here at Indiana Grand. My whole thing with her is going to be six furlongs. Now, she does have a win in a sprint race, but there's some other fillies in this race that I think are more accomplished sprinting, including the morning line favorite, Black Sapphire, who comes out of a decent race at the end of last year. Discreet Baby, who won the race, is pretty darn good, and a couple horses have come out of that race to win next time out. And then Crunch, who ran in a very contentious First Lady Stakes at the end of last season, set the pace and faded back to fourth, and has been off since then. So something might have happened in that race and needed the time. And, you know, Crunch was really strong in sprint races, 3 for 3 last year. Now, Randy Plott doesn't have the best numbers off the long layoff, so that's the dilemma that you got to use with Crunch, but she is certainly accomplished as a sprinting filly. And then, you know, Pretty Assets is another one that comes off of a long layoff, who likes to come from the clouds, but does have a couple of wins going short as well. So it's just one of those races where I think you have to figure out how the race is going to be run. It looks like there's some defined running styles in the race. Crunch, Black Sapphire got some speed, Miss Tizcat on the outside, and then you got the closers. So I think at sprint distances, they're more closers. Pretty Assets for sure is a deep closer, and then Drink of the Creek is more probably like a mid-pack type of runner in a sprint race. But yeah, it's a fun little race. Race number 4.
Well, and as I wrote it up, my analysis, Drink at the Creek has got the triple whammy, as I call it, dropping down, cutting back, turf to dirt. And you put those three together, and it's Yahtzee. The second leg, 5,000 non-2s, interesting condition. And this, I wanted to stand somewhere and try to tiptoe through. And here's our man Amos with Escondarea's Dream on the outside with Deshaun Parker. And I thought that Escondarea's Dream is as viable, if, for those of you that approach things with singles in a pick five and in multis in general, I think you could do worse than singling Escondarea's Dream.
Yeah, what race is that again, Steve?
That's the fifth.
Fifth race, okay. Yeah, I'm just shuffling my papers and all that. I know what you're talking about, but yes, And I watched the start of the race, because it did say bumped at the start. It was a pretty solid nudge. And, yeah, after the nudge, he didn't do very much as a favorite. But sometimes with, you know, lower-level horses, if you give them too much adversity, they can just kind of, you know, throw in the towel, if you will. And you know, so I'm willing to forgive that race. And if you look at the race two starts back, then that's obviously a race that wins this one. And then, you know, on top of that, you got I made the second choice, a horse making a big drop down, but he's not been seen since September of 2018. Mm. That's the five horse best you ever seen. And, you know, Chris Davis is the trainer. He does all right, does very well, I should say, with long layoff horses. But it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't jive or whatever. You run in a, you know, $400,000 stakes race, now you're in for a nickel. I don't know. Those are the ones that really cause concern for me making the morning line, because I'm like, I don't know what to do with this one. Mm-hmm. You know, I put a second choice at 3-1. After that, I don't really have a whole lot of love or any real handicapping angle. So, yeah, Escondarea's Dream probably on some people's tickets would be a single in race number 5.
A couple of other options, Wave Runner and Topango, were the others that I think I ended up putting as C's, and Best You Ever Seen, as you mentioned, you know, may just be okay, and they're daring people to you know, to take them in this spot. We talked about the sixth, and so the second to last leg, the seventh, this is a 1 mile, $5,000 third condition, and you got a similar situation here, a long layoff with a horse that seemingly is you know, being dangled, shatterproof, down inside. You got some inside out speed and closer power in the favorites. Lemon Blitz for there's Chris Davis again with Santos Sanjur, who's off to a rough start. There's a couple of jocks that are that have really stumbled out of the gate looking for wins. Who is it that's winless that's surprised me?
Deshaun got Franklin. Off to a good start.
Malcolm Franklin.
Yeah.
You know, I was a little surprised to see him 0-for-24 to start the meet. But anyway, Peppered, to me, I'm going to try to get through this with the two favorites, Lemon Blitz and Peppered. If there's an off-the-pace horse, it's Peppered. And if it's up on the front end, it's Lemon Pepper.
Yeah, I think Lemon Blitz. Yeah, I think you got that one figured out. I wish I had something more than that. So you seem to have it, you know, you got a covered, you got a speed horse, you got a closer. So those are the two I would probably be playing as well as race 7. But race 8, Steve, that's to me so far is the best quality race that we've carded so far at the meet coming up, or so far our first 6 days or whatever is this 8th race.
Get into it, and you hinted at what may be a I don't know if Emma Zima is going to go off at 10-1, but there's Brendan Walsh and Declan Cannon looking actually for his first win at the meet too, but Amazina 10-1 was very attractive for me. I put her up on top as the best value, but far from the only candidates, because certainly the stake horse in here is Zuzana for Bob Hess, coming last seen in November, winning the red carpet for Jeff Lambert, and the now 6-year-old Wilburn Mare, 7-5 on your line.
Yes, the winner of the red carpet going a 3/8, first start in 2020. What I do like about Zuzana is the fact that she has run well on turf courses that are not rock hard. And because we had that rain yesterday, the turf course is going to be a little softer than what we saw opening week. And yeah, we're just going a mile, but she had a breakthrough performance in the red carpet. You know, she's done all right in mile races. And, you know, you can see in the forms before her red carpet win, she won in a mile in a starter allowance at Santa Anita last summer. So therefore, I think she's really, really tough. And, you know, it made her 7-5, and you know, more roses from the Brad Cox barn, you know, took on the big girls, if you will, at Churchill last time out and didn't do that well. You know, they tried to put this filly on the turf last season, and both races got taken off of the turf, so they must think that she's going to take to the grass somewhat. She's got a lot more early speed than Zuzana and War Cabinet, who's a deep closer that's done all right in some stakes races. You mentioned Amazima. It's just like I run out of points doing these morning lines sometimes. And I think Susanna's going to get bad, and I think More Rose is going to get bad. So probably if I had to do it over, I'd probably put War Cabinet like at maybe a 9-2, and then I can move down Amazima probably from 10-1 to 6-1. So that's probably the one thing. Sometimes you get hindsight's 20/20 doing the line, but I do think Susanna and More Roses are going to be the first two in the betting market, and yet just the depth of this field from those top four is outstanding for a two other than allowance optional claiming race in Indiana Grand on Wednesday afternoon at the end of June. I love it. This race came up salty.
More Roses to expand on her presence in here. She's an Uncle Mo, and it even though she broke her maiden off the turf at Indiana, and then Brad Cox tried to get her on the grass again, and it washed off. Don't be shy about her making the transition to grass. There's no doubt that with this pedigree that she'll be okay. So I went three deep in here to close out my ticket with Amazima, Zuzana, and more roses. 1-5-6 to end the sequence. I put up a $72 ticket, 4x2x3x2x3, and we'll wait for, when do scratches come out? They should be out fairly soon.
Well, you know, usually we had them out at the 9 a.m. hour, and I didn't see them, and much to my chagrin, and we still don't see them, so I don't know what's going on. I'll have to ask about that.
All right. Well,
they should be up, but I'm sure they'll be up momentarily.
All right. I'll make my final adjustments and get them on our website. And we're looking forward here to you know, the regular visits, and delighted to be, you know, looking at the Indiana cards and handicapping this pick five. The meet off to a tremendous start. So continued success, and we'll look forward to checking in every few weeks.
You got it, Steve.
But always a pleasure. Bill Downs, everybody. And you can follow Bill on Twitter. Bill Downs, I want to say Bill Downs 1, if I'm right. Is that right? Bill Downs 1. And Downs is with an E. D-O-W-N-E-S 1. Bill Downs. The voice of Indiana Grand. Top of the hour here. And when we come back, I've got a couple of different things in mind. We do have Seth Merrill yet, of course, before we wrap up on this Wednesday. We're going to get back to Pete. Haven't talked to Pete in at least 2 weeks. Want to get his Royal Ascot experience, such as it is. He wasn't there bending elbows with mixologists, but he enjoyed it undoubtedly nonetheless. And Phil Ziegler, I hope, from Emerald on their opening day. And by the way, I mentioned on Monday the news had come out about the start of the season at Presque Isle. And the start date was actually pushed back a week, so July 29th. First, they were hoping to get open for the 22nd, so extra week. Back after this, hour three.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Took a trip on a bus that I didn't know. Met a girl selling drinks at the disco. Said truth comes back when you let it go. Seems complicated cause it's really so simple. Walking down Young Street on a Friday. Can't follow them, gotta do it my way. No fast lane, still on the highway. Moving in and out, no doubt there's a ride.
No time to get down cause I'm moving up. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. Take off the grass in the bucket. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. No time to get down cause I'm moving up. Take off the grass in the bucket.
We're back at the races. Going to get Pete Fornital in a minute here. He's wrapping up some taping of his stuff. And while we do that, let's see. Let me actually catch up on a couple of things. If you haven't seen the aforementioned Ohio Derby, it is a overflow field. Calumet has, I think, 9 horses in here. No, I'm just kidding. They only have 4. Yeah, they got 4 horses. I think, from what I can tell, the people seem confused by the also eligible element. Clearly, Thistledown, a place that rather than make the AEs, the 15, 16, 17, 18, they draw the also eligible must be part of the field. So rogue element looks to be, when it says also eligible, it doesn't mean that there's 1 horse and 14 AEs. I think it means that rogue element, who is a maiden for Calumet, it means that rogue element, just based on earnings and the fact that he's a maiden, makes sense that he's the AE, the 2 horse, and then everybody else is the body, the 14 horses that are in this field. Dean Martini for Amos, and this looks like a very savvy claim that Amos poached one off of David Burnson and Brad Cox for $50,000. That came at Churchill in mid-May, right as they were getting started. So then came right back in a nice allowance and was second to the good Ron Moquette, man in the can, you know, 3 weeks later. So Dean Martini, a Cairo Prince gelding. In fact, out of Soundwave, Brett and his dad bred this one and was a $220,000 yearling. Dean Martini. Interesting. And Amos has got to get himself a rider. He's listening as no boy. Rowdy Yates. Rowdy Yates, the morning line colt for LNN. Last seen in Saudi Arabia in that Derby Cup. He was 4th. Lebda. Claudio Gonzalez, a Calumet bred that they sold. Amazing. They've got 4 of their own horses and 1 that they bred Calumet. This is a raison d'etat colt, Lebda. Most recently won the private terms for Gonzalez and Euro Stable. Alex Cintron going to come out to Cleveland to ride. Here's one of Calumet's, the homebred Tonalist colt. Jack Sisterson's got Dak Janiels, who we talked about. This was a horse the other day that you'll recall when he ran at June 4th. This was a horse that Rich Eng liked, and he ran well, got caught late at 14-1. And that was the race that Counteroffer won, and now comes back to the dirt. Dak Janiels in here for Jack Sisterson and Calumet. Nice Bill Mott. This is an allowance horse that's been kind of lurking and kind of forgotten about this horse. Sprawl, coming off an allowance win at Churchill. Paco Lopez gets aboard, and this horse has got speed, so you got an idea of where you'll find Sprawl early in this race. City Zip Colt from that last crop. Claiborne and Mrs. Dilschneider. Informative for Uriah St. Louis. He's cross-entered in New York as well, so we'll see what Uriah does. But John Bazzono would come out and ride if they make the trip. Bear Alley for Dale Romans. And this is a maiden, but a maiden who's been okay. He's been second three times in a row, and that includes a turf try at Gulfstream, and was behind What a Country on that the nice state card at Churchill. What a Country was that that nice winner we had with Red Dog, with Gary Hartledge, at a beautiful price in that maiden race. Code Runner for Asmussen and Calumet, the Honor Code Colt. And then you got South Bend, Stan Huff, Algorithms Colt, that has been keeping nice company on the grass. And I'm really not sure why Stanley has kept this one on the grass all winter, now gets back to the dirt. It's not like, you know, he didn't distinguish himself. He won the Street Sense. He was 5-2 behind Silver Prospector in the Kentucky Jockey Club. Now he finally gets back on dirt. He's sneaky in here. I'd be anxious to see what the morning line ends up. Soros for Gustavo Delgado and Eclipse. This is the Commissioner Colt that looked like it might be something good when he won the Smooth Air, and he's actually been working sharply at Calder. Established, Mike Stidham. This is a maiden, but he's been second twice and had a 92 buyer behind Per Capita at Churchill 3 weeks ago. Storm the Court, as promised. He was the one horse intended for this spot all along. The Court Vision Colt, of course, last year's two-year-old champ. And the aforementioned David Burnson, who is the top partner on the ownership line for Storm the Court. And, you know, those of you that have been watching the figures, watching the sheets, Thoroughgraph, Storm the Court has not performed badly. Everybody is going to make this assumption that, oh, he hasn't done anything, he hasn't improved. He's actually run the same race three times so far. And if he could take a step forward, Storm the Court, you know, who probably goes favored in here, at least morning line favored, you would assume, just on past success. Unrighteous for Pletcher and Calumet. This is a Violence Colt that broke his maiden off the turf event that was on a fast track at Gulfstream, and actually faced a couple of good ones, including King Guillermo, you know, when they tried him as a maiden in the Tampa Bay Derby. Celtic or Celtic Striker, the Congrats Colt for Ray Handel, coming out of the Matt Wynn. There's your field of 15. 14 go postward in the Ohio Derby, the Grade 3. And it's got that kind of field because they're giving away real money, the $500,000. And Grade 3 in Cleveland on Saturday. Pete Fornatale is standing by. And haven't talked to Pete in 2 weeks plus. And good chance to catch up.